The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
What is going on, Bills Mafia? It is your host, AJ Cebulski, with another edition of AJ's Analysis. We have a big show for this week. If you're listening to this, you'll probably be listening Thursday afternoon or towards the weekend. So again, thank you to everybody who gives this podcast a listen. I am joined today by former Bills Pro Bowl center, Eric Wood, now the radio analyst for the Buffalo Bills. He hosts the Centered on Buffalo podcast and hosts What's Next with Eric Wood. Follow him on Twitter at ewood70. Eric, thank you for joining me today. Greatly appreciate it. A lot to talk about. And how are you and how was your Christmas?
Christmas was great. I'm doing well. Our kids are at a fun age, almost 6 years old and eight. So they're still believers. And so we had a fun Christmas day yesterday. We did Disneyland. That was our big gift to the kids, was Disneyland last week before the Chargers game. So we spent a few days out in LA last week. And then last week there was some stir that Matt Parrino created about when you did the exit with him and said my biggest guest was coming on next week, and we had talked about me coming on, and I had a feeling that it was going to be me, and then we confirmed that, and I had some fun with Matt Parrino over that one.
Yeah, that was definitely a mistake. I will not be ending that like that again. But it was a good joke, and it was all in good fun. So that was a pretty funny moment there. I had a good laugh about it,
man. I may start ending all my podcasts with that just to cause a stir like that one did.
Yeah, I was thinking, like, you know, maybe I just continue with that and, like, take the reins with that and just be like every time. But, yeah, it was a funny moment. So here's what we're talking about today. Chargers versus Bills recap. Bills playoff chances skyrocketing. The state of the AFC. Josh Allen for MVP, question mark. That's definitely a big question mark. And then Bills versus Patriots preview. So let's start with this Bills-Chargers game. Bills win 24-22. Tyler Bass with a late field goal. Ed Oliver gets his sack to hit his incentive. So he's a happy man. He said after the game that he will be giving more Christmas presents to his family. The Bills were able to close this one out. Obviously, the big moment. Probably one of the best throws of the year, in my opinion. Josh Allen to Khalil Shakir on a 3rd-and-4, evades pressure. You know, pass rush is coming at him. Launches the ball down the field on the run, like fading back. And Khalil Shakir, thankfully gets touched with his knee down, kind of giving the Bills a better opportunity to take time off the clock. So just your original thoughts on that and how kind of this, you know, overall game went.
Yeah, it obviously was closer than many expected. I knew that there was the reality that this could be an inspired Chargers team. I've been there when there's an interim head coach come in. That happened to me twice throughout my career. First time my rookie year with Dick Geron getting fired, and then later in my career, Rex Ryan was relieved of his duties and Anthony Lynn takes over. And no one comes in and says in a team meeting, it's not a coach, it's not a player, no one stands up and says, hey, we got to play harder this week because we got to prove it wasn't us. We got to prove it was the previous head coach's fault for the way that we're playing. But subconsciously, I feel like it's just natural. And whether that's embarrassment that you got your head coach fired as a team and you say, okay, now we got to play harder and better because that obviously was unacceptable. I don't know what exactly happens, but there's a post head coach being fired bump. We've seen it. Jeff Saturday wins his first game last year. Antonio Pierce wins it this year. And you think, oh, well, those are just two former players. And it's more relevant because of the recency. Well, since 2019, interim head coaches are 7-5 in their first game. And since 2009, they have an above 50% win percentage. So it is real. These teams are bad enough at the moment to get their head coach fired, and then they generally win their next game. And this was an inspired Chargers team. They came out with their hair on fire from the start. They played very aggressive defensively, way different than they played the week before against the Raiders. They had incredible ball security. They had 5 turnovers, 4 lost fumbles against the Raiders. And the Raiders had 35 points of their 63 off turnovers. And they go in this game and they don't turn the ball over one time. And so they played a lot better. And the Bills survived in advance. 6 days rest. It's tough to travel all the way to the West Coast, especially on a short week. You're facing a team where you don't have much film at all on the quarterback. And then a defense that was likely going to have some different wrinkles without Brandon Staley as the head coach.
Yeah, for sure. I think the Chargers, like you said, did show some different looks. Derwin James closer to the line of scrimmage. That was something that was talked about with Brandon Staley that he didn't really do a good job of. It was clear and evident that was the case against the Bills in this one. My next question for you, Eric, is the Bills obviously lost the turnover margin, had less first downs and less time of possession. Not many teams win that way. So my question to you is, did this game show you that the Bills can win in a different way? Because look, if you look at it, if the Bills found a way against the Broncos or found a way against the Eagles or found a way against the Patriots early in the year, they're sitting at 10-5 right now and a lock to make the playoffs.
Yeah. I mean, I'll say this, you know, the Bills throw an interception in the first play of the game against the Patriots. They're up 10 points at the half against the Jets, even against the Broncos. Like in all those games, with my experience covering the team the last 5 years, not as a player on the broadcast end of things, on the media side of things, this has happened a number of times, and the Bills find a way to win those games where they're the better team. And, you know, week one against the Jets, that was a tight point spread, but you take Aaron Rodgers out of that game and it's probably a double-digit spread. And so, you know, you looked at that, and over the years, the Bills have given you no real reason to think that they can't pull it out. And then just a number of times this year, the Bills have lost games late, and it's been uncharacteristic of what we've seen, especially from the Bills in the regular season as of late. You know, when they get beat in the regular season, we remember them. It's the Hail Mary. It's the collapse against the Vikings. You know, you remember those games. And so this one, although, you know, it came down to the wire, you know, they fall down 10-0, and I wasn't overly concerned, but as the game went on and Easton Stick continues to make plays and the pressure continues to get to Josh Allen and the chunk plays aren't coming on the ground, there was some concern there, but it is a good sign that the Bills, you know, got an ugly win, because this year those haven't come for them.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think they were able to find a way, which again, they weren't able to at some points earlier in the season. So that's a good thing. Now, star of the game, Gabe Davis, you know, going into this game, Eric, 0 catches in 3 of his last 4. That's kind of concerning, but again, I think, and my question will kind of lead to this, but let me read the stats off first. 4 catches, 130 yards and 1 touchdown for Gabe Davis in this one. Is this kind of who Gabe Davis is kind of becoming? A guy that's very dependable, gets a high snap share, very good at run blocking, very good at clearing out routes for others. That's kind of been his role. But when called upon, he can kind of take over games. A little inconsistent. Is that kind of who Gabe Davis has become with this Buffalo Bills team?
It is. And yes, you want your number two receiver. Everyone looks around the league and says, we all want T. Higgins to be our number two receiver. Well, that's not what the Bills have at this point. They have a team captain in Gabe Davis who, after the Jets game, Joe Brady, he goes without a catch and said he would make Gabe Davis the MVP of the game if he could, the way he blocked, the way, like you just said, cleared out routes. And Gabe is a valuable asset to this team right now, but it's not always showing up on the stat sheet. Everyone, myself included, will focus on the drops at times or the lack of separation at times, but there's games where if Gabe Davis gets the right matchup, he can take the top off the defense still. He's great in the run game, and that's his role at this point. You know, Dalton Kincaid is taking a lot of his catches. Shakir at this point taking some of his catches. James Cook out of the backfield, Ty Johnson out of the backfield. A number of guys are taking away the line share that would normally go or be targeted to Gabe Davis. So he's not getting those as much anymore, and that's fine. You know, that's not great for him in a contract year and for, you know, him maximizing this contract year. But the Bills can play winning football with Gabe Davis on the field right now, and it might not always show up in the stat sheet.
Yeah, you're, again, spot on. I totally agree with everything. Gabe is a guy that it's not going to always show up on the stat sheet. But like you said, Joe Brady, when he had a performance where he didn't really show up on the stat sheet, still said he would give the game ball to, you know, Gabe. So that's pretty special. Now moving to James Cook, and there was a good question from Twitter or X, if you want to call it that, about kind of the run game in this one, Eric, with your experience as an offensive lineman, 20 carries for 70 yards for James Cook, zero catches. You know, it's obvious, Eric, here moving forward that defenses will keen on James Cook moving forward. They're going to attack the ball. He's now a focal point of this offense. He's kind of come to the occasion in a way. Only 3.5 yards per carry in this game. And again, the Chargers going into this one were not that bad of a run defense team. They were middle of the pack, very bad against the pass in most cases. So what did you make of James Cook's performance? And the question that the Twitter user asked me was kind of what was the reason that the Bills had issues getting the run game going in this one?
Yeah, so it was interesting. Against the Cowboys, when James Cook completely went off, they were in the shotgun a majority of the time. This game, for some reason, and every game plan is going to be different, they were under center primarily. Well, that takes out their tackle trap pool for the most part. They ran a lot of zone to either side, generally to the left-hand side, I felt like. But they just ran a lot of inside zone, and they felt like that's how they could attack this defense. Zone is generally a safe call, especially when you expect, you know, a new guy calling the defensive plays to maybe dial up some more pressure. Zone takes care of the gaps. It doesn't give you as much penetration, but I just felt like they weren't getting to the second level well. And, you know, the Chargers did a good job. They did a good job defeating blocks, getting James Cook down. He was great after contact these last few weeks. And, you know, look, he enters the game with 4 consecutive games over 100 yards from scrimmage. Would we love that streak to just continue week over week? Absolutely. But it's not always going to be there. And because they were bringing down their safeties and focusing more attention, well, then you see the deep shot to Gabe Davis down the field. They were able to take the top off the defense there. If Josh puts a little more air into the ball that gets intercepted, maybe Diggs takes a really long one to the house, and we're having a totally different story right now. But you know, they took James Cook away from this game for the most part. He did have a few nice runs in that game. But, you know, this is a fairly inexperienced offensive coordinator still figuring it out with this Bills offense. Now, he's done a phenomenal job, I feel like, so far in his figuring it out process. But last game, they just couldn't necessarily get it going. And give the Chargers credit, I don't know that it's anything they did schematically. You know, for the most part, they were bringing an extra safety or an extra defender into the box. It wasn't the classic too high shell that a lot of teams will give to the Bills to try and prevent the big play. And so you could say that extra guy in the box helped, but I thought for the most part, you know, they did a good job of holding the point at the line of scrimmage, which give their defensive front credit. And the guys at the second level were able to bring Cook down when they did get to him and at one point forced a fumble.
Yeah, there's going to be a back and forth with this Bills offense moving forward. You're going to have Josh Allen carry the load majority of the time, but there's also games where James Cook is going to have his moments again. And that's the good thing about this Bills team and why I think it makes them so special here down the stretch. Stephon Diggs, 33 snaps in this one, 60% of the snap share. Had the neck injury earlier in the game. What do you make of that kind of snap count? I know it's been low the past couple weeks now with Joe Brady. Does it say more about Stephon Diggs, or does it say more about what Joe Brady wants to do using different personnel and to attack kind of different matchups?
Yeah, I heard an interesting thing last week where someone talked to a guy that worked with Joe Brady at LSU and said the way that they like to form game plans, and Joe Brady in particular, is they try and find Waldo. Where's Waldo? Where's the weakness of this defense? And let's exploit it. And I believe for the first, you know, few games with Joe Brady as offensive coordinator, the biggest matchups were that linebacker level, middle of the field. That's where we're going to attack, whether it's getting those guys matched up on our backs out of the backfield with New York, whether it was Kansas City, Dallas, a little bit more run game, some Josh Allen runs up the middle as well, get an extra blocker. And those were kind of the matchups that they specifically targeted. And, you know, fantasy owners are making a really big deal about it. And, you know, Diggs is feeling it himself, feeling some pressure from the national media. I mean, after the game, Adam Schefter put a tweet out about how little that Diggs has been used in the last 5 weeks, and Diggs actually responds to it and says, hey, we're winning games. That's all that matters. And I love that attitude from him. And there's times where, especially when you start the season the way he did, you're going to catch a lot of attention from the defense, which is going to open up other people. And then as they step up, as James Cook becomes more effective, Kincaid, Shakir, then you can bring Diggs more back into the mix. But, you know, I honestly thought last week would be his get right game, get him back going. And he was close. I mean, there's that deep ball down the field that if that one's completed, then he's likely over 100 yards and we're not having this conversation. But you miss those and there's a couple either misfires or drops, and then all of a sudden we're still having this conversation. So I was hoping that last week would be the Stephon Diggs get right game. This week in Orchard Park, it's supposed to be chilly, but it doesn't look like it's going to be any crazy weather. Bill Belichick's generally trying to make you play left-handed as an offense. So does that mean in this game, generally the attention's on Diggs, and we've seen true double teams, like not rolled coverage towards Diggs against the Patriots. At times we've seen absolute true double teams on him. Well, it wouldn't surprise me this time around to see more attention go to Cook. And then maybe this is the week that Diggs gets going. And the only reason I'm even concerned about it is I've played with big time number one receivers, Terrell Owens, for instance. Those guys like to get the ball. And I just want Diggs to be in the right frame of mind as the Bills make a Super Bowl push in the playoffs.
Yeah, he's very important. And they kind of go, although they have been going without Diggs the last few weeks and having success, they do go as Stephon Diggs goes in most cases. But again, I think it shows why they're so dangerous this year, being able to show different looks and use different personnel to have success. A couple more things here about this one. Deontay Hardy, any thoughts on him? Just his fumbled punt return. He really hasn't lived up to that contract that he got in the offseason. I think he's not looked terrible, but there's never been a moment where, you know, he's had a few big catches. The Chiefs game comes to mind where he, you know, ran that route across the middle of the field and made a nice catch. But just your thoughts on Deontay Hardy, only seven snaps in this one. So just what are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, to me, it's been a disappointing year for him. And look, I mean, the way the Bills were up against the cap last year and they bring in Connor McGovern, that's their biggest signing. And he's been great, solidifies that left guard spot for this offensive line. So that's our big signing in free agency last year. And so you kind of had to bargain by around. And so they bring in Hardy, who missed the majority of last season, had the toe injury and all that. And to me, I was hoping to see more explosiveness. You know, every time he catches the punt where you're holding your breath thinking, okay, this one can go to the house. And besides one decent return this year, the production just hasn't been there. You mentioned the play against the Chiefs, and I'm thinking that play in London against the Jags down the field that he made. And beyond that, we just haven't seen a whole lot from this year. Now, if Shakir wasn't playing as well as he's been playing, if Kincaid wasn't playing as well as he's been playing, does he get more snaps on offense and maybe have a better rapport with Josh Allen? Potentially. But at this point, he just hasn't produced for this offense. And, you know, he hasn't even been the most productive, maybe gadget player. We've seen Shakir take a lot of those kind of orbit motions, maybe the jet sweeps across the formation, whether they're real or just a play fake. We haven't even seen him necessarily in on those. So it's been disappointing, but to keep it in perspective, it's not like we gave him a monster deal either.
Yeah, it's definitely they probably overpaid a little bit for a punt returner, and that's kind of his role at this point. He'll have some opportunity, a couple snaps a game here and there, but that's kind of where he's at, and I totally agree with you. Von Miller, non-existent again in this one. I just don't, you know, just watching him, it's kind of concerning in terms of just his ability. He loves to use his speed on the edge and get around his bendiness is insane. That's what he was made for. That's how he's such a great player. You haven't really seen that, and I thought we saw kind of a jump from the Jaguars to the Giants game early in the year. But since that Giants game, I don't think I've seen really much of a increase of production from Von or success in winning and getting pressure. Now, he did have some late pressures against the Chiefs, but do you want to see Von Miller kind of getting a lower snap share or even consider like taking him off the field, giving Kingsley Jonathan some opportunity or something like that?
There's times where that certainly looks like it could be the case where we'd be better off not having him on the field. I'll say with AJ Epinesa out last week, then he's going to get some snaps. It's interesting to me. He hasn't had the production, but there's still times where he's being chipped, whether it's with a back or a tight end, or they're sliding the guard to him. So even though he hasn't had the production, he's still garnering the respect from teams each week. And maybe they're saying this is the week that it clicks for Vaughn, and we don't want him to completely take over the game plan like he could in 2022 and prior. And so there's still hope for me that Vaughn can make an impact on this season. And whether that's it clicking, whether that's him gaining more confidence in the knee, he shedded the knee brace a couple weeks ago. I was hoping that would give him a little extra spark. But to me, Von Miller, and I played against him multiple times in my career, Von Miller, when he's going against a tackle, he's generally not getting multiple first half snaps or first half sacks. And that's not an indictment on him. A lot of what he's doing is he's getting pressures, but he's setting you up. And then late in the game, he ducks under when you thought he was going to do a bull rush. It's a line game where you didn't see it coming because they hadn't shown it yet. And we've seen that at times from Von, even when he was in Buffalo last year. Well, on his limited snaps now, it's almost like he can't get to the strength of his game because he's so dang smart out there on the edge that, you know, whether it's, you know, health or stamina or whatever it is, he's not even getting to the point where he can set up everything that he's used to being able to do. And so, look, there's a reason that Bean and Sean McDermott are making him active on game day each week. And it's not because he's got a big salary, because Sean and Brandon, they've shown before that they'll play the best guys. And so whether it's what they're seeing in practice or, you know, whether they're hopeful as well that it finally clicks, to me, I trust them that what they're seeing in their decision-making is that something is coming.
Yeah. I mean, I do agree. I don't think he should be inactive. But again, it would be interesting to see maybe a little bit more of a snap share from Jonathan. But again, with AJ Epenesa's injury, like you said last week, there was, you know, more or less depth, sorry, at the position. So let's see if I can figure it out, it'll be a big help. So, and I want to move to one more guy before we get to these playoff scenarios, these crazy, unrealistic, almost impossible situation and scenarios that happened this week for the Bills. Ed Oliver, career season continues. I mentioned it earlier with Daquan Jones potentially coming back. Eric, can Oliver continue to excel and take his game to even another level if he can get his guy, Daquan Jones, right back next to him?
Shoot, I'll take what he's been doing right now. I'll lock that in for forever. I mean, this guy's been playing out of his mind and in a great way. And, you know, early in the season and prior, it'd be like, man, Ed's having a great game. And then all of a sudden, here comes the costly penalty. Or maybe he disappears for an extended period of time. But this year especially, it's been consistent. And it's even been little things that don't show up on the snap count that when we're watching film of opposing D line, we're like, holy smokes, do you see this guy running to the football right now? I mean, his pursuit on plays is excellent, and they're giving him, especially since Daquan's been out, a very high snap count each and every week, and he continues to produce and show up. And to me, when he missed the New England game, you're already without Daquan Jones. When he missed the New England game, that's as big of a factor as anything. You know, we all put so much focus on that game-winning drive, Mac Jones at the end, but Ed Oliver not being on the field was a huge loss for them, and I'm just excited. I love his attitude about the contract as well, because, look, a lot of guys, they shut it down once they get paid, and we used to talk in O-line rooms saying, hey, look, this might not be their best player, but this guy's in a contract year. He's going to bring it every single snap. Well, Ed Oliver, he's turned his game up a notch post getting paid, which makes me have even more respect for him.
Yeah, Ed is balling this year, definitely living up to that contract. I think there was a lot of fair criticism. Like you said, he did disappear at times earlier in his first four seasons. He would have his moments where he would have that great game, but then he would kind of just disappear. This year has just been a consistent dominance in the interior, pressures, helping other guys out. His pressure led to a Puna Ford sack against the Chargers. So again, Ed Oliver's playing really good football this year, and I expect him to continue to trend up. Now, Bills playoff scenarios, opportunities, Eric. The start of the week, the Bills had a 63% chance to make the playoffs per the New York Times playoff machine. And what happened this week? Almost impossible. Steelers beat the Bengals. Browns beat the Texans. Falcons beat the Colts. Bucks beat the Jags. Patriots beat the Broncos. And the Raiders beat the Chiefs. The only game that didn't go their way, Eric, was the Dolphins over the Cowboys, which is a big deal, because now it forces the Ravens to kind of win if the Bills want to get that AFC East crown. The clinching scenarios for next week against the Patriots, the Bills have to win in all of these. Bengals lose to the Chiefs, Steelers lose to the Seahawks is one. That's probably the most likely, a Bengals team going up against a Chiefs team that needs a win badly. They're now 9-6, and then the Steelers as well need a win against the Seahawks. The Seahawks are still fighting for their playoff lives. Then you have another scenario where the Bengals lose to the Chiefs and the Jaguars lose to the Panthers. That's another one. The third one is the Steelers lose to the Seahawks and the Jaguars lose to the Panthers. So essentially, two of the three of the Jaguars, Steelers, and Bengals have to lose next week in order for the Bills to make it. And then an insane one, Bengals lose the Chiefs, Colts lose the Raiders, Texans lose the Titans, which, again, that would also get the Bills in if they win against the Patriots this weekend. Now, the Bills could also get the two seed with how this weekend turned out. If the Bills win out against New England and Miami, they will be 11-6. And if the Dolphins lose out with losses to Baltimore and Buffalo, they will be 11-6. The Bills will have the tiebreaker on the Dolphins and the Chiefs with head-to-head wins. If the Chiefs were to win out, if all three teams were 11-6, the Bills have the tiebreaker there. And obviously the Dolphins would slide into that wild card spot. How realistic is this for you, Eric? The 6 seed, 7 seed still possible, but a chance at a 2 seed now after, coming off that bye week at like a 15% chance to make the playoffs. Now with this weekend, probably one of the luckiest weekends in terms of Bills playoff luck I've probably ever witnessed.
Yeah, well, I'll say this. Heading into last weekend, it sure felt like the Bills had more than a 61% chance of making the playoffs. If you look around at teams' remaining schedules, Indy and Houston still had to play each other in week 18. Like, to me, it didn't feel like it was only a 61% chance of making the playoffs. But all that aside, to me, the most likely scenario, because they're both favorites, would be Kansas City winning, Seattle winning, Bills win against the Patriots. Those would be three favorites taking care of business, and the Bills would then lock in a playoff spot. The interesting thing is going to be if, A, when and what time and what day that game is, if the Dolphins lose to the Ravens this week. Is it Saturday night? Is it Sunday night? It's likely one of the two, because it'll likely be the most watched game next Sunday if that's the case. And then if the Dolphins win and the Bills win this weekend and they're locked in on that 6 seed, does it just become rest your starters? Because we've been in this must-win mode for so long, and we're not going to get a bye, and we're going to be playing on the road. So do we just rest starters and not, it's not likely going to be scorching hot down in Miami this time of year, but, playing down in Miami takes a little bit more out of you. Do you rest the starters? And so there's a lot that can change in these next couple weeks. Obviously, the messaging out of one Bills drive is going to be survive in advance. 1-0 this week. That's our only focus, beating the Patriots. And Sean will show them clips of them losing to the Patriots earlier in this season. And he'll find some type of bulletin board material to where these guys are completely ticked off and all their focus is on beating the Patriots. But, we have the luxury and we have the privilege of not having to focus on that. And we can look around and play with different playoff scenarios. And I mean, I still can't believe Tony Pollard didn't get in the end zone. And that, to me, that's the play of the game where they don't get points. There becomes a 7-point tackle essentially at the 1 yard line, and then they lose that game by 2 or 3. They lose on that last second field goal. And so, disappointing end to that Dolphins Cowboys game, but hopefully the Ravens can take care of business. Now, the Ravens looked awesome against the 49ers. Can they rebound on a short week for them after Monday Night Football and an emotional game against the Niners? We'll see.
Yeah, now let's move to the state of the AFC. Kind of a good segue into that, Eric. I just want to talk about a couple of these AFC teams. The standings after week 12, the Ravens were 9-3, the 1 seed. The Chiefs were 8-3, the 2 seed. The Jaguars were 8-3, the 3 seed. And then you look at the Steelers were 7-4. The Colts were 6-5. The Texans were 6-5. And the Bills were the 11th seed in the AFC after week 12. Now, going into this week, the Ravens are now 12-3, the 1 seed still. But you had the Chiefs lose to go to 9-6. They were 8-3, so they're 1-3 in their last four. The Jaguars are 0-4 in their last four. The Colts are 8-7. The Texans are 8-7. The Bengals and Steelers are all 8-7. So all those teams are bunched at 8-7. You have the Browns, who are showing some life with Joe Flacco, kind of a resurgence of his career. Amari Cooper having probably one of the best wide receiver performances I've seen all season. So where are you with this Bills? Like, if they can get in here, like, let's assume they get in, and let's talk hypotheticals. What's the state of the AFC for you? Are they the second team? Where would you put the Bills amongst all these AFC teams that are kind of fighting and division leaders?
Yeah, right now I'd probably put them right behind Baltimore. And not that I think Baltimore is head and shoulders above the Bills. They've just played more consistent this year. And look, the Bills could easily be sitting at that one seed right now if they took care of business earlier in the season. But with the injuries they had early in the season, and thank God the injuries have slowed down a bit as of late, but the way they got dinged up early in the season, there, especially on the defensive side of the football, there was going to be some natural rough moments beyond that. And I think the defense at this point is playing excellent football again under Sean McDermott, but that takes some time. It takes Dotson to get some experience. Bernard's continuing to develop. They bring in Rasul Douglas. They bring in Linval Joseph. You got guys that are playing, you know, some different roles up front. We have Greg Rousseau playing more three technique on pass rush downs because Daquan's not in the lineup and Jordan Phillips is now out. And so they're finding themselves defensively. And I think, and then the offense has played great under Joe Brady. And it seems like they got a different energy about them. Sean McDermott says the same. They're just playing a little more freely. They're having a little bit more fun out there. And it seems to be paying off offensively. All that being said, you know, I'd put them behind Baltimore, but nobody wants to face the Bills in the playoffs. I mean, this is a team peaking at the right moment. And that's where, you know, if you win this one this week, you feel really good about going down to Miami. If it's for the division, you feel awesome about that game. But if Miami takes care of business this week, do you pull the reins and say, okay, let's rest up? Or do you try and kind of keep the mojo going? Because they're a bunch of second half mistakes and an overtime loss away from beating the Eagles. And truly everyone in the league's talking about how Buffalo is the hottest team in the league.
Yeah, very, very well said. I would put them there too. I think they're right now, with the way the Chiefs have kind of descended, actually, I mean, it's definitely the weakest the Chiefs have looked. And then you look at the Jags, who have also, I think Trevor Lawrence has regressed in a way this year. I think he's been good, but again, turnovers and the Calvin Ridley, I thought they were going to be a better football team with, and again, the loss of Zay Jones here and there and the Christian Kirk being out does affect them. But again, the AFC is wide open. And I think, again, the Bills might be packed in with all these teams, right? They may be an above average football team, but the difference is, for me, I think going into the playoffs the last couple of years, you always felt as if the Chiefs and Bengals were a tier above them. You could make an argument that the Ravens are right now, but that's really the only team in my eyes that you could say are a clear tier above the Bills in terms of the AFC kind of playoff picture. I want to talk about MVP now, Eric, just quick before we preview this Bills Patriots game. We've got about 10 minutes left. Thank you for all the listeners, all the people that will be tuning into this one. It's been a great, great show so far. Again, I appreciate Eric for coming on. All right, MVP. I have four people here, Eric. I want you to rank them in order. I know that we could probably agree here that if Lamar beats the Dolphins, that he probably will have a good case for MVP, and the committee is going to give it to him just because of their record. And they don't really focus solely on numbers for MVP voting. So, again, I think it'll be more of a Lamar Jackson kind of MO here. But based off this, I have some four people here: Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, McCaffrey, Tua. Allen has 83.3% of the Bills' touchdowns this year, 40 of the 48. Lamar Jackson has 52.2% of the Ravens' touchdowns, 24 of 46 of their 46. So again, that's like a little more than 50% and a 30% drop off from Josh. And then McCaffrey, 38.2% of the touchdowns for the Niners. Again, that's very impressive for a running back. I think he has a very good case for it. I would probably vote him right now. And then Tua has 45.6% of the Dolphins touchdowns. So just give me those guys from most likely to least likely to win the MVP as of now. You can base it off everything if you want. You can put just give me your MVP list, kind of.
Okay. Well, I mean, obviously we've seen the Vegas rankings, and so I'll assume that that's correct for now. Lamar 1, Brock Purdy 2, McCaffrey 3, and Tua 4, and Josh 5. So there's your top 5 with Vegas betting odds right now. If you forced me to do this, and yes, there is some serious bias in here, and I'm going to admit that, I would put Josh 1, McCaffrey 2, Lamar 3, Brock Purdy 4, Tua 5. And I say that because 3 out of the last 4 MVPs have led the league in touchdowns. Josh had his reputation and everything tarnished from the very start of the season when he had 4 turnovers at New York, and no one's ever gotten off of that. And that's fine. But when you consider that Lamar right now has 24 touchdowns and 13 turnovers, so he's got 11 more touchdowns than he does turnovers. But Josh has got this massive turnover problem, and I understand it's played a role in some of their losses this year, but he's got 40 touchdowns to 18 turnovers. And four of those came in the very first game of the year when everything, you know, was all on him. And this, you know, Josh has got an issue and he's got a problem. And then they blow out the next three teams they play and everyone says, okay, Josh is back. And to me, you know, most valuable player. He has the most value. And look, their record probably doesn't justify it right now, but if I was picking a true MVP of the team, the someone that is the most valuable to their team and, you know, a playoff team at that, Josh would be one. And I understand that there is bias there as well.
Yeah, I think I would put Josh one. Like, I've argued on Twitter. Like, I've said CMC and Allen are the only two in my eyes. Like, I don't even have Lamar in the conversation because, like you said, a 24 to 13 turnovers. I think that defense – and, again, the conversation about the steal or the Ravens-Niners game will be that Lamar Jackson kind of stole the MVP away. But what I – you know, what's the bigger story in my eyes is that a Ravens defense went into San Fran, forced five turnovers of a team that was coming off – six games of averaging 34 points per game, held them to 19 points, and kind of ended Brock Purdy's MVP chase. So again, like, yeah, Lamar's been good. I think he's been the product of a very good team, and he's very talented. He's a top five quarterback in this league. But if you're talking most valuable, like you said, Eric, it's Josh Allen, and that's the end of the story. And then CMC as well, I would put in there. But if I would also vote Josh Allen if I was on the thing. Again, that – probably won't happen because, again, I think the committee goes by wins, and Lamar Jackson with the stats and the wins and his team and his success this year, I think he'll get it done if he beats the Dolphins.
Yeah, and one more thing on that. Like, if the Bills aren't blowing out the Cowboys so bad and they're just going to keep the ball on the ground, Josh had four pass attempts the entire second half, throws for 92 yards. And if the game plan was flipped and that was all on Josh, I think he could have got more traction for MVP coming off of that game. Now, look, I've had this conversation with Josh before. He's like Ryan Fitzpatrick. He doesn't care about stats to the point where if it's third and long and he throws a pick inside the other team's 15-yard line, that's a punt to him, and that's completely fine. Other quarterbacks, they won't throw the ball away. They'll take a sack before they throw the ball away at times. And, look, they're not ever going to give their guys a chance down the field because they don't want to risk it. And I understand that, but Josh is – so much comfort in his situation in Buffalo that he knows that he can throw a ball down the field on third and long, you know, a la Commanders game. And he's done it other times this year where it's essentially a punt, but it turns into another turnover. And Josh isn't that concerned. He's not that concerned about an MVP trophy. He's concerned about winning ball games. And if you asked him about his turnovers, he would say the thing that pisses me off is the fact that I've cost us games and put us in bad positions at times. But if it's the national media talking trash on me, then let them have some fun, whatever.
Yeah, you're totally right. I kind of was at that. Like, also another thing is, like, if Lamar beats the Dolphins this week, like, Josh Allen would be way more happy to go down to Miami for the division than care about his MVP trophy. So I don't think it's that big of a deal, but it's a fun conversation to have because if you look at numbers, Josh Allen's got to be up there. Bills Patriots preview, Eric, really quick, just a couple of things. The Patriots, you know, have had success on the road recently, kind of hurting playoff chances from the Steelers and Broncos on the road, defeating them, which is, again, is impressive for a team that's kind of, you know, 3-11, now 4-11, kind of have that a good defense still, can make some plays, but their offense is averaging 14.1 points per game, which is just not that good, led by Bailey Zappe. You have Ezekiel Elliott, who's been, I think he's lost a step, but I think, you know, he's done a good job. He found the end zone last week, nice hurdle to find the end zone over a Broncos defender. What are your first thoughts about the game and just the keys for the offense as well in this one? Limit turnovers, balance, don't beat yourself, physicality, all that stuff. Kind of the, I know you kind of always give your thoughts after games and you always preview the game. I kind of do the same thing with that. So give me your thoughts, your takes, and what you think about this Bills-Patriots matchup.
Yeah, so this is a Patriots team that has played consistently good defense all year. You know, there's been times where they've been blown out this year, but for the most part, they played consistent defense, and that's without Judon and other injuries that they've had on the defensive side of the football. And so Bill Belichick, even though there's rumors that he's gone after this year and all that, he's still got this team playing good defense. Offensively, they've been a dumpster fire, but they still get enough points to beat the Bills earlier in the season. And it's Mac Jones. Well, now it's Bailey Zappe, and it seems like the guys are rallying around him. It doesn't mean that they're lighting the world on fire offensively, but it seems like he's given guys more chances to make plays. Hunter Henry in particular just become a red zone weapon here with Bailey Zappi's, you know, letting him use his 6'6" frame, go up for balls. And so to me, when I look at this matchup, I mean, the Bills are a double digit favorite at home playing for everything. So if they take care of the football, which they didn't do last week, and then you're in an absolute dogfight against a team that's ready to collapse, but then you give them some momentum. So it's, can you get up on this Patriots team early? Can you not turn the football over? And can you prevent the chunk plays? Because I don't feel like this is a Patriots team with Ezekiel Elliott, you know, getting most of the carries at running back and Bailey Zappi at quarterback. And, you know, they got Douglas on the outside who's got some wheels. We saw him in the last game against the Bills, and the tight ends can make plays. But if you can eliminate the chunk plays and not let them make big plays offensively against you, have no turnovers or maybe one, protect the football, win the turnover battle, I'll say. And then if you can jump on them early, I think this is a game where the Bills roll them. And like I said earlier in the podcast, I have a feeling Sean McDermott all week is going to be hammering these guys, showing them stuff that people said after the last Patriots-Bills game. He'll have these guys ready to roll this weekend in Orchard Park. And I'll say this, you know, the fan support was incredible throughout my time in Buffalo. And that's me playing in the longest playoff drought in all of professional sports. And the Bills hit a lull midseason this year. They get back to 500. And I'll tell you what, you know, and they were a couple games over 500 or one game over 500 when the Cowboys come to town. That might be the loudest I've heard Highmark Stadium all season. Like, this is a passionate fan base. Yes, that's well noted, dedicated, loyal, but they're also intelligent. Like, they understood the effect that they could play on that game on a Cowboys offense that's really struggled on the road. And I say that because I feel like this week, last home game of the year, likely this Bills Mafia will show up in a big way to where the guys, they're not going to let them down out there.
Yeah. Especially with, like you said, the way the first matchup with the Bills and Patriots went. Again, I think this is the biggest game because it's the next one, like you said, for the Bills. If they win this one, their odds go up to a 98% chance to make the playoffs. So you're basically a lock unless the Bengals win out and the Texans. You know, you have to have a lot go wrong for that case. Again, the Bengals have the Chiefs and Browns left on their schedule. So there will be some really bad luck if the Bills win this game and don't get in at 10-7 if they lose to the Dolphins the next week. Do you have a score prediction for this one, Eric?
Give me 31-10 Bills.
All right.
What's yours?
I want to hear pure domination. I'm going to go a little bit closer. So I'll go 31-20. I think the Bills find a way offensively to, I think the spread's 11.5 right now. I think that was the opening line. So the Bills are 12.5 favorites on the road. I think the Bills do come home. I think they handle business. Maybe it's a 31-13. Bailey Zappi with 2 minutes left, you know, drives down the field and gets a late minute touchdown. So look, the Bills have everything in front of them still. They're a really good football team the last few weeks, and I think they can, with Joe Brady, Sean McDermott kind of rejuvenating this team and these players, I think it's going to be a special run. Eric, thank you for coming on. Let the people know again where they can find you, what you do, and any cool things that you have planned or coming up.
Yeah, on social media, I'm at Ewood70. I have the Centered on Buffalo podcast, which has been a lot of fun. This week, Rob Gronkowski is joining the show, so we'll have fun with him and try and figure out if there's ever a possibility where he returns to Buffalo and plays a little football. I always get a kick out of Rob playing for our rival his entire career for the most part until he had that little stint in Tampa at the end. And he still talks about how much he loves the Bills, which just cracks me up. It's classic Rob Gronkowski. But so check out that episode. And love to connect with the fans. Easiest way is DMing on Instagram because that's public. But I always appreciate, and I've appreciated even more in this next chapter of life on the broadcast side, really connecting with fans and doing podcasts like this and people like yourself, brother.
Yeah, I greatly, greatly appreciate it. It's Eric Wood, former Pro Bowl Bills center, host of multiple podcasts. Go and check him out. Has great content all around. For next week, Bills Mafia, it will be another episode of AJ's Analysis. We might be previewing a Bills versus Dolphins AFC East crown on the line with also a potential number 2 seed on the line. If the Dolphins win that game, they would be the 3 seed because the Chiefs, if they do win out, have the tiebreaker with the head-to-head win earlier in the season. Very excited for next week. It's going to be a big week for the Bills. Must win against the Patriots, and essentially maybe a must win against the Dolphins here in week 18. Thank you all for tuning into this one, and I will see all of you next week.